I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Stephen Kane from Glasgow, and you're listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, as I know Dane loves his comics and superheroes, does he think the current pandemic is a step towards humans mutating? And as a follow-up, if you could all choose a mutation, what would it be? Mine would be more melanin in my skin, as I'm a pasty ginger who gets sunburnt from the fridge light. And remember everyone, question everything.
Hello everybody, and welcome to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer and occasional actor Dane Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, aka The Hizzer,
hello,
and a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we are talking everything from...
Everything from Stephen from Glasgow's question: is the pandemic going to make humans mutate, and what mutation would you like? Stephen, I'm not sure what to say there. Dane?
He's right. It'll be a very... But the thing is, mutation takes place on a very small genetic level. So you will mutate, and the mutation will just be you developing gradual immunity to this the COVID-19 strain of the coronavirus.
Yeah. Nothing like the X-Men, sadly.
Nah, nothing right. Cool and crazy like that. That being said, though...
Maybe in Glasgow.
Then again, you never know. Maybe the pancreatic cells amongst Glaswegians will change, because obviously COVID is exacerbated by diabetes complications and obesity is an issue in Glasgow. So maybe people evolve in that way. In the same way that Africans evolve sickle cell, because the Plasmodium parasite can't consume it, and therefore malaria doesn't spread as well. So who knows?
So we ask all the questions there.
All the questions.
Variety of answers there.
All the questions with all the answers. And if you have any questions for the podcast, please free to get in contact with us as well. And if you do enjoy the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Spotify and you'll never miss an episode. Or you can also find us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network. So we welcome all the questions and all the guests. That being said, on today's show, our very special guest is a writer, social media creative and cultural entrepreneur. She's one of the founders of the Black Theatre Club. She has written for publications such as The Guardian, Vice, Vogue and The Independent, and she has recently written and presented a series for Channel 4 entitled How to Not Be Racist. And she's doing it with the patience that you people do not deserve. It is the enchanting Shantay Joseph. What's happening, Shantay?
Hey, nothing much, you know. I'm just sat inside working on like maybe the fifth sunny day of the year that we're going to get in this country. So that's sad, but I'm also talking to you, so that's good.
It's so good. Thank you so much for coming. As you know, I am a longtime fan. I have very many times been scrolling and then rolling on the floor, ruffling at your comments and your commentary. It's such a narrative. It's definitely someone I definitely try to emulate. It is such a pleasure to have you on as well. And obviously, we had Kelechi on a few weeks ago and stuff as well. So that's it, man. It's getting all the new guard of the realist sisters out here. So thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you even forsaking some vitamin D to come on the podcast as well. It means so much to me. It means so much because obviously there's no carnival this year. So,
well, if there's an online carnival, it's not the same, but yeah. I guess.
Close enough. It's close. It'll do for now. Because I might be like, oh, I wouldn't watch this. But then when I watch Beanie versus Bounty Killer do their sound clash, I was jumping up and down in the room. I was boom, bang, banging, licking down walls, popping open magnums. It was still a vibe. So we just have to adapt. And you know what? Maybe there's like a silver lining where if we learn how to like organize carnival online, then like say like someone's infirm or necessarily disabled and they can't necessarily go to carnival, then in the future we have a little link and then, you know, people can go with like a GoPro, or, you know, people can just have their access to the floats and stuff, so you can like follow a float around carnival.
Yeah, so that'd be so sick, you know, like a VR headset when you can experience.
There you go. Yeah. So POV. Yeah. So exactly. So 3D carnival experience. It's like
copyright.
I'm going to take that patent and add to it 3D wines, digital wine. Imagine a digital wine. You could get a digital wine. There you go. No one's too sweaty. There's nothing too invasive. Like, I think if we could have a room where you could get a digital wine, This is like, yeah, protect the boundaries. And also with a digital wine, you have to get consent first from the host of the wine before you enter for the wine.
Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. What are we doing inside, Chance? We're going to be out there making all this money. Get this bread.
Well, look, there's still time. There's still time. I mean, it makes you realise how experiences are worth so much more than material possessions, right? Like, all those experiences that people are missing out on this summer, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't want to make any presumptions. I mean, I wasn't someone that grew up with the abundance of material possessions anyway. So things like doing stuff outdoors and learning to run and do your own little acrobatics and keep yourself occupied. Mm-hmm. I've always part of my childhood and stuff as well. But yeah, I definitely agree, Howard. I think we definitely have, this time has definitely made people appreciate just the value of just contact with other living sentient beings.
Quality time, eh? Just put your phone down. And look at the sky. Do you know what I mean?
Like, this is taking some nature.
Not sure about putting the phone down.
You know, I don't really like people that much, if I'm honest. Like, I enjoyed the isolation of lockdown. I very much enjoyed not having to cancel plans at last minute or not agreeing under duress. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
No one's bothering me. I'm like, sorry, can't come today.
Do you remember house party where the first people were like, yeah, let's all have reunions and meet people from before, remember? Yeah, remember the good old days? Hey, my ex-girlfriend from 4 years ago. Wait, no. Oh, no, I hate you. That's why we don't talk. Because I hate you. Yeah, that's why we don't talk. And you'd be
people
like,
were like, we're going to do a quiz. We're going to do a quiz every week. And it's like, do it once. Never again. I hated it. I hate my family. I hate you all. I don't ever want to play games with you.
This is why I live away from you. Yeah, it was all fun and games at first with that. People like house party. You can have different, so many people in there. But then people could just walk in. And I was like,
yeah.
And now I realize why in real life, house parties used to end in fights because anyone could walk in. And now on the line, if I'm having a nice conversation that we're having now, then an ex walks in and is like, hello, stranger. I'm like, what are you doing? Ruining my vibe. How could you allow this to happen, broadband? I feel like people should have been able to take advantage of digital media in the first place. Like if you were somebody that wanted to keep in contact with other people, like you could always use WhatsApp or use like Skype for that in the first place. So I think at first people were like, now I can contact the people I've never been able to contact. And then you realize there's probably a reason for that. Mm-hmm. Like most people aren't supposed to have these wide-reaching social networks anyway. So
I think it made you realize when you did want to spend time with someone how much that mattered. That
exactly. Absolutely.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Shanti, you have to understand, Howard is a new and very loving father, so he has now a newfound appreciation for family and togetherness.
And their arms and what they can use their arms for with my child. So that's kind of very useful.
That is cute.
Yeah, it's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, as the format dictates?
Absolutely. So as I say, Shante, thank you so much for being on the podcast. We appreciate and value you. And as our esteemed guest, we invite you to ask the first question, any question you'd like, which we will discuss for 15 minutes. And then Howard himself will ask a question. And then I will do the same. Lather, rinse, repeat. We all go home. Everybody have a nice time. Hopefully you get some sun. Enjoy the world without so many of the people in it. Sound like a plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, cool. So my question is, it can be about anything, right?
Mm-hmm. Anything you like.
Why do meat-free burgers, right, that attempt to emulate meat not even taste like meat? And why would you not just eat meat if you want to eat something that tastes like meat?
I love it. I love that question. Have you got any brand examples we can consider as part of your thing? Or have you... Because I can advise you on some of these things. We're going to do a web series, me and you, with just veggie burgers, I think.
I've heard of corn is one, right?
Yeah.
Corn would be one of the primary examples.
Their chicken nuggets slap, though. I'm not going to lie.
Are they good?
I get it.
I don't know. For me, it's I share a sentiment where it's the... I guess there's now this kind of weird space between veganism or like hardcore veganism and being a carnivore, which is now called plant-based. And this is the thing that I find to be a very ambivalent term, plant-based. Because to me, when you think about it, like if you mow a lawn, right, and you get the bag full of grass, that's technically plant-based. But if someone took that and made it into a sausage, I'd be like, that's disgusting. But technically, it's plant-based. So, corn's supposed to be like a form of mushroom or something.
These things use up more more or less the same amount of water as you would if you were gonna just grow a cow. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So obviously, I'm a huge fan of like oat milk. Oatly is literally my life. I would die for that oat milk brand. I would go to war for them on the front lines, right?
I did a brand partnership with them. You should have told me. They're getting me a bag of crates of it. I got that. I got like the Oatly matcha tea. I got Oatly chocolate milk. Oatly barista edition.
Right now, because we're going to fight.
I told you. That's what I'm saying.
We're going to fight because we can.
Shanti, you slept on me. That's what I'm saying. People keep sleeping on Dane, and Dane is out here making deals, adopting early trends, representing very early. I was in the game from morning. If people are following me, I've been very outspoken about my lactose intolerance. Oatly were like, you'd work for us perfectly.
So have all black people.
Yeah, I tell them that all the time. But some people are like, yeah, but bruv, I like Guinness Punch, or blah, 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 milkshakes. So I was like, people are like, oh, Shake Shack and blah, 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 blah. So I was like, you know what? I guess I'm alone out here doing my thing, eating oat milk. People are like, how could you have oat milk and porridge? Ain't that double porridge if it's made from oats as well? I was like, you people, man, you need to get woke on the oats, innit? So it's the one. It's the one.
Making oat milk, particularly en masse, does also use a lot of water. So I guess people who are doing it for environmental reasons, it's like, do you know what I mean? It's like, where's the trade-off?
Do you
know what I mean?
Why would you be eating a vegetarian burger is the first question I'd say to you, Shanta. What would be your reason behind it? Is it kind of ethical about animals or?
With burgers and stuff like that, I don't know. I'm just not really, unless it's a steak, I don't really want to eat it. I don't like the idea of, you know, meat in a burger, it's just different. Like beef is just, I don't know, it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a burger thing because remember, a burger is like, when you think about it, in strictest terms, when you have like a cow, you have all these choice cuts, whether it's like, you know, as you said, like the rump and you obviously different parts of steak and, you know, rind and stuff. And then I guess the remaining meat would have been put together to make burgers and sausages. Essentially, they're like reconstituted and stuff. So somewhere along the line, we kind of forgot that. And then the burgers themselves became quite gourmet. And I'm always like, well, how gourmet can a burger be? Because it's like the reconstituted leftover stuff. But then I guess if you're always going to eat all that stuff, you'd want to eat in the form of a beef patty, I suppose. But yeah, I just think that there's, for me, a vegetarian burger or a veggie burger, I just think it's an insult that someone's like, okay, here's a burger, what's it made from? You know, different vegetables, tomatoes and lettuce and onions. Okay, and then what do you top that burger with? You know, lettuce and onions and tomatoes. Wait, what? How? What else? Pickles. There's pickles in the burger already. So now I'm eating a double, triple, triple, but a double burger. And it's just like, there's nothing burger about this. So essentially, this is a salad between two pieces of bread.
I'm gonna take the other side. I'm not because I'm not a vegetarian, but I think I'm gonna take the other side. I had a burger that was made from sweet potato, pumpkin, and spinach the other day, and I would tell you that was a tasty experience. I wouldn't compare it to a delicious Five Guys or wherever you like your burgers, but it was a healthier, I think, is the thing to say as well, you know, in terms of calories of the meat and stuff. So if you're looking for a healthier option, that is it. But the thing that you're talking about now isn't that. You're talking about this thing that comes in a pack. So have you seen the Beyond Burger? Have you tried that? Have you tried this thing?
I haven't tried it yet.
Okay, so I genuinely think the three of us should... I've got many people who can film things for us. We should do some taste testing with some burgers. Dane, you're up for this, right?
Yeah, I mean, because I get what Shante's saying is that why do people need to make it like meat? Because for me, that it loses the appeal. When it's like chicken with two N's, I'm like, I mean, like you see those things in Sainsbury's when it's like, have a burger. Why is it with an O? Have a burger. It's almost like a burger. It's like, this just doesn't makes me more apprehensive about trying this kind of stuff because it's like almost as if they're like, it's like there's a place that used to be near my house that was called Kebabish. And I'm like, why is it Kebabish? Because it's like, it's almost kebab, not quite. In fact, that would make sense if it was like a plant-based kebab shop and it could be like Kebabish. But this was way before people cared about veganism. It was just called kebabish, and it really
sure,
sounded like...
I would go as far to say, no, mate, that the Beyond Burger, if I made you both a Beyond Burger as a follow-up to this podcast, and I do it with a nice brioche bun, and you like cheese on your burger, not lactose, maybe not. But, you know, I would guarantee you that would be a tasty experience. And there's one in America that isn't here yet called the Impossible Burger, which I've been told is a Five Guys worthy burger.
Can I just say, though, one thing I've taken from this conversation is that a burger is a social construct. Anything that is between two buns is called a burger. So if I have Frosties and I put it between two buns, is that a burger?
It's a good question. It's a fair question.
You're just saying you had a burger that was like sweet potato and like spinach and falafel, whatever, and it's between two buns, it's a burger. But it's not really. It's just bread with sweet potato and spinach mashed
together. It's a sandwich. It's a sandwich, right?
It's a sandwich. It's a sandwich. It's a panini at best. I mean, this is what I mean. Like, I just feel like there was just a point in time where hipsters have, in the same way that they gentrified cider, have now gentrified burgers. And yeah, and because of this whole need for it to be plant-based, I really feel like the reason why is that there's just a, I just think there was someone just, this is more of a commercial thing rather than a health issue, I think, in terms of this whole trying to sexualize plant-based foods and make them sound like meat and stuff. I just think there's just, the marketing of meat has probably been a lot more effective in terms of sexualizing the idea of meat. And, you know, when you watch adverts, it's like, even when you watch an advert for like Burger King, it's like, look how the onions bounce and the meat's dripping with juices. It's like, it's always weirdly
look
sexual.
Look at those onions bounce.
Look, yeah, it's like when you see like the chicken rotisserie, it's like, look how crisp it gets. Oh, succulent. It's like, I'm eating this. I'm not trying to move to it. But so I think there's just been a long-standing kind of paradigm where commercially you could market meat as being quite sexy and also an indicator of like wealth and accomplishment, isn't it? It's like, you know, meat is a part of a banquet. Like whenever you'd see like the quintessential like banquet, it's always got like the piece of gammon with the pineapple on top and the pig's got the apple in its mouth and, you know, the big turkey and stuff. So I think because people still have these attitudes towards where they link meat to wealth, even amongst like the diaspora and stuff as well, like suya and stuff like that, seen as a sign of wealth. I think that's just the approach whereby they're like, we can't probably wean people off that easily onto a plant-based diet, or, you know, people that maybe historically have tried to market meat are now trying to move people towards this whole plant-based thing.
I just
trying to be like, it's almost like eating meat, and that's why you keep seeing these things. Because I find it as weird as when people say stuff like, I don't like meat on the bone. People are like, I don't eat meat on the bone. Oh, I don't know. Some people say that. I don't like meat on the bone. I'm like, that's how you know it's meat.
Yeah.
That's normally, for me, I'd rather meat on the bone because then I know what I'm eating. Whereas if you just give me meat in a form of a stir fry, I don't necessarily have any idea what I am eating. So,
but why are we doing this is the question. That's always the thing you have to bring it back to, right? What is this movement for? And if it's for, I would personally say the reason I've bought some of these products is guilt. I don't really like, you know, I like animals. Dane, you know I like an animal and a pet.
I know you like an animal.
And so, you know, I don't really feel like I want to eat them because, I mean, that's not to say that there isn't a world in which that could happen. As in, like, if the man down the road had, you know, 20 cows and, you know, after a while he turned some of them into food, that would be more sustainable to me than a horrible, horrible life that loads of cows are having for us to have quite poor quality meat.
I get that. I do feel like, though, sometimes it's very hard to contextualize the conversation about diet and nutrition along human or social moral lines stuff, because if, for example, if me and a tiger were in a cage and they threw a slab of meat in there, or they were like, well, we've only got one meat, you have to fight each other for it, that tiger's not going to be like, well, I've known you for a long time, Dane, I shouldn't do this. What do you say, buddy? Like, they have their own, as carnivores and apex predators, if you get eaten by a lion or a tiger or any other kind of apex predator, then no one's going to be like, that lion was using no restraint in the way he ate, Dane. That's just a part of its makeup. It has to eat to survive. Now, I guess human beings have evolved to the point where we don't necessarily need to eat a meat-based diet alone. But I just think that some of that is more of a function of privilege than it is, you know, our natural evolution. There is a market for people that want to be a bit more conscious about or have a certain element of ethics to their diet. And I think people have identified that, and they're just trying to, it's kind of exploiting to the point, in the same way that like e-cigarettes and vapes were supposed to like help people to stop smoking. But now it's like, well, now that's a market unto itself. So now vaping itself is as a bigger growth market as smoking is. So I'd say the reason why we're seeing stuff like burger or tofu with two O's, which I literally saw today, is because there's just, I think this is now it's just in vogue. And I think especially a lot of young Generation Z kids are coming up with more a lot more enlightened about the idea of a plant-based diet. And so yeah, I think a lot of people are just trying to fill that that demand. Because why is KFC doing a meat-free burger?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, and it was made on a meat grill, so then people who didn't eat meat can even eat it.
Exactly. It's, or people go to Nando's and they're like, do you have things other than chicken? If you go to Nando's and you ask for something other than chicken, you deserve a slap in the face. That's our default to Nando's. What doesn't have chicken in it? This? Slap?
I don't know, isn't it a good... Aren't there good things at Nando's other than chicken?
That's true. That was an overreaction, sorry. What kind of slap would you like? Medium? Lemon and herb? Hot slap?
I mean, the thing about it, really, is that, well, that point you made, I don't know, like, sustainable, right? But then you can't... Because you can't replace... I mean, you're basically, I assume, Shante, unless I'm mistaken, you're quite like a tasty burger, right?
Yeah, well, I don't really eat burgers. They don't. They just don't go down well for me. They just have unless it's like a chicken burger.
Yeah,
that's the only thing. Well, like my stomach.
Exactly. So, well, red meat as well. We don't. People, obviously, people that naturally genetically have lactose intolerance probably don't process red meat as well. And also, I heard the nutritionist saying about the fact that the reason like human beings aren't even supposed to consume those different food types all at the same time, like as you bite into a burger, which is why kids tend to like take the patty out and they separate it when they're eating it, because having the meat, which is quite a chore to digest, with the bread as well, which obviously gluten is obviously a bit more difficult to digest, and then you've got the sugar and the ketchup and all this other stuff, by the time it gets to your gut, you're just like, ugh. Because in one day, Shante, let me tell you, a cautionary tale, yeah, about red meat. Once, I went to Gaucho, and then I went to Creams, which is like Casper's Diner.
What is you doing, babe?
Yeah, right? I'll tell you what I was doing. I was constipated for 48 hours, Shante. Stomach wasn't ready for that. Basically, my stomach had to put up like a whole scaffold, lots of rebuilding. Like, they had to lock off roads in there and be like, nah, we're going to, this is a...
Is it?
That
makes
sense.
One of those ones.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, I don't know. You've got to have to do some hard work here. This is, it's horrible.
It was a bad, bad idea. So I just think, yeah, I guess myself, after that kind of experience, I'd be like, oh, I need to have these things, but much more healthy. And I guess there are commercial vendors that see that kind of new demand for people to be a bit more conscious about their diet.
It's a very good question.
It's a great question.
I'm going to definitely change topic away from vegetarian issues with my question. And you know, our show, just listeners probably have become aware that we're kind of recording this remotely, and you know, it means that when we record it, often it'll be coming out around the week of the recent news of different things, so we can be a bit more topical. So listen, we need to talk about Wiley. I don't think this show can represent what it represents and what Dane represents and not talk about it. So I'm going to kind of open the floor. Mm. I don't know if it's worth, either Shante or Dane, I'm happy to... For some people don't recognise the importance of who Wiley was or is. Because I think that for a lot of people, obviously, you know... with people, you know, like Stormzy and AJ Tracy, you know, these people, he was so ahead of his time at one point, right?
Well, very, 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 to simplify it somewhat, it is said, so far as that subgenre of British contemporary music that we call grime, is that Wiley is the reason that everybody's here. So, you know, at the turn of the century, as this sound was kind of beginning to were still relatively experimental. And then we saw the emergence of Dizzy Rascal winning the Mercury Music Prize at the same time, maybe one level below in that hierarchy of profile. Wiley was known as the main progenitor of this new sound. So, you know, had lots of different names like dubstep and sublo, but yeah, finally, I guess they kind of stayed on the term grime. And he was a leading producer after being a very prolific member of the garage crew Page Go Cartel. And then they started, and then made a transition into the grime music with his songs like Eskimo and Ice Rink. And
if you want to, if you want to listen to more about that subject, you could go back and find our episode with Bushkin, right? Because exactly, you know, similar era.
Who Wiley has also beefed with, by the way, just to give you guys context. So he also beefed with them. But no, I mean, yeah, he is known as definitely being the one of the primary progenitors of the grime sound that people here kind of enjoy today. And
And this week he decided he didn't like my lot, basically, which was definitely up there, right, in terms of like Twitter explosions. I mean, were you watching it happen live, Shante? Were you online when it was going on?
It's one of those things where, like, if you haven't been blocked by Wiley, then you've probably muted him. So when this was going on, a lot of us just like did not really see it or like acknowledge it, because I was kind of like on the TL and I saw, you know, when you've muted someone and it says like quote tweeted and it says, yeah, oh, like click open or you can't see this or whatever. So I was just like kind of going about my business. And then obviously people who weren't blocked by him took screenshots, then posted the screenshots of his tweets. And then I was like, oh my God, went on his profile, saw he was like basically having another episode, and it was just like constant and it was going on for like 2 days at this point.
When he was being told in a very civil way, here we are giving you this breath to really articulate what you're trying to say. Yeah. And even though you seem to be making some generalizations here, which you might want to correct before he continues narrative. And he was like, everybody can shout. No one can tell me nothing. And so people need to understand that with Wiley's rise and level of influence within the industry or the genre, you know, that's also led to a lot of contention between him and his peers. Because for those who don't know, if you are a Jewish grime fan or a Jewish listener to the podcast, not by any means to reduce the barrage of anti-Semitic statements that he made, Wiley has also beefed with Dizzy Rascal and Getz, and he's beefed with Scorcher, and he's beefed with Merkston, and he's beefed with Devlin, and he's beefed with Stormzy and Tiny Temper.
He's got a record.
Oh, yeah, beefed with Tiny Temper. Yeah, so he has a long... Oh, Drake as well. So, you know... He's what was the question, Howard?
The question is, what the fuck happened? What the fuck was that?
Yeah, what the fuck was
Wiley,
that?
Good question. What the fuck was that? And you know, it's obviously, it's interesting actually, isn't it? Because I think I asked a question to you and Kelechi about how the Jewish population could input and support BLM, right? It was a kind of quite an open question, I think, in the sense that I wasn't trying to direct it in any particular route or deflect anything back to the Jews in any way. You know, it was more just kind of like, as a minority, how do we support that cause? Some people, Jews, were confused how to talk. So we had a really good conversation with it. So it's kind of interesting to think, not much less, you know, about a month later, someone who is a, you know, incredibly prominent figure would kind of go and do what he does. And, I mean, I don't know if you're happy with me just to launch a slight tirade of
I'm absolutely
my opinion.
Fine. Listen, tirades, you know, you're on the internet, mate. If you can't tirade, then where else can you do it?
I mean, look, for me, you know, I grew up in this country. My great-grandparents didn't. My great-grandparents fled Eastern Europe because Jews were persecuted, and that's obviously a long story that you can go and read many books about. In fact, there might be a really famous book with a couple of stories about Jews being persecuted. You might be able to find that somewhere. Yes. 100 or so years later, you know, most Jews live quite happily and in small communities, as you know, in North London or in Manchester, you know, in Britain, Jews have a very quite insular population, and there's a load of us who aren't very religious. But the kind of the idea that anti-Semitism is something that Wiley would want to kind of push is just, to me, I just couldn't believe it. Like, and as someone who grew up in East London, and to see him kind of go and do that, given basically it all comes back to the fact his manager is Jewish and he thinks he's ripped him off, right? That's basically the whole thing. It amazed me to witness such ignorance and almost the digital age. Like, Twitter facilitates people being ignorant fucking people, right? Because if you want to get into Israel or Jews generally, if you want to get into Israel for one thing, like, I mean, ask most Jewish people, they would say a very right-wing government is in charge of Israel and are doing some very bad things. And that's really unpleasant. And all of us have to look at that. But those people in charge of Israel definitely don't fucking represent me, just like Boris Johnson doesn't represent me or you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the reality of that. And then on the flip side of it, and obviously we were one point going to get Tez Ilyaz back on the show to do an Israel-Palestine special. But, you know, unfortunately, whether people want to face it or not, on the other side of the Jews, there are people in the Arab world who are staunchly anti-Semitic. And actually, they quite like to kill all Jews, which is something that you don't really want to have to face up to in this day and age. But unfortunately, that's still going on. So that's part of the reason there's a right-wing government. But all of those things, the idea that you think Twitter is the place to debate them and not just have really nuanced, educated debate and opinion is just beyond me. And to see him do that, I mean, I assume for you guys, it was a massive disappointment.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like, Riley isn't really someone, I think we've, like you said, you've listed all the people that he's beefed with, the way that he has basically undone his whole legacy through all of these like online tirades and all this kind of stuff. And so I think in a weird way, like people, a lot of people like do not like mess with him like that.
Yeah.
And they've seen the things that he's done. And so it was so weird kind of being asked to take accountability for Wiley when anyone who knows anything about the scene or whatever knows that, like, he, like, if it was Stormzy or Dave or whatever, like, I think people would just be like, wow, like, this is crazy. And it would be a lot to kind of handle. But Wiley is definitely someone who is just like completely in a world of his own.
To give context, Wiley supports Tottenham Hotspur. So that's he's a staunch supporter of Tottenham Hotspur. So again, to not even see the you know, there's almost like a legacy link with the Jewish population of London and that football club, and then to support it and to be such a avid supporter of it and not understand that intersectionality speaks to where, like Ashanti said, it's like, we were disappointed, but we weren't surprised.
It was upsetting, but it was also like we don't expect much from Wiley, and Wiley represents Wiley.
Yeah.
Wiley doesn't represent grime. Wiley doesn't represent black people. Wiley doesn't represent the Black Lives Matter movement. So those two things are completely separate. And I also just think, like, with Wiley as well, when he was going on that tirade, he wasn't interested in learning. He wasn't interested in taking accountability. He wasn't interested in apologizing. And even when he had the chance to do that, he still didn't take any accountability for anything he said or even apologize properly. He just further went on to be like, yeah, my manager was an idiot and blah, 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 blah. Do you know what I mean?
Which, so it's like, well, he could have very rationally just directed all of his vitriol towards his manager. And
Go and rush your manager.
Yeah, go rush your manager because, and even if, you, and you know, if you, if it's the case that your manager is engaging in shady deals, that's going to be believable. Where, but that is not to be associated with his faith or his race.
Exactly.
So it's nothing to do with that. Because also, I feel like there is also this subversive hatred of Drake. That is one of the reasons, was a catalyst for this narrative as well. Obviously, Drake being of dual heritage and being of African-American and Jewish ancestry. And I guess from Wiley's perspective, whether he will acknowledge this or not, Drake in a very short space of time has become a very influential person within the British comedy scene and music scene, and is very much has generated very positive links with a lot of artists from Wiley's era, as well as new and emerging artists. And I really think there is an element of jealousy to that. I definitely do. I feel like, given the fact that Drake has not only worked with some of the newer drill artists more recently, but also was instrumental in financing the third series of Top Boy. You know, he's done songs with Stormzy. He's worked again with Kano and Asha D on Top Boy, as well as Santan Dave, of playing Santan Dave in his radio and stuff, and obviously some of the previous work he had done before with Section Boys or Smoke Boys. So I think there's a large amount of jealousy that comes from Wiley, and I feel like with a lot of jealous men, it's a very patriarchal act to cite racial privilege when you feel inferior to another man.
And that phrase is the one that I was just, you know, because there's a chance maybe at some point, Dane, we'd have, we talked about Josh Howie, who's a very intelligent comedian.
Great guy.
And talks really cleverly about anti-Semitism. And he may come on the podcast at some point. That'd be lovely.
Actually, we should definitely have him on, but yeah, really great guy.
Yeah. But the word privilege is a fascinating one, because I noticed a couple of weeks ago, Jewish privilege, hashtagging on Twitter. And it's basically things like Wiley acting like that makes people think that there is a kind of incredible easy life that Jews have had. And I'm not, this is where we shouldn't be comparing. It's not about comparing different minority groups and the experiences they've had. There will be pros and cons to everyone's experiences. But the idea that people think that, and, you know, if I'm honest, just to make it really clear from my side, like, Wiley, fuck you, man. Like, that is the lamest approach to, like, trying to talk about greed. Like, and fuck, you know what? If you want to talk about greed, there's going to be people in the Jewish community who are greedy. Just like there's going to be that in every fucking community. That's not a hard thing to get your head around.
Yeah, Birdman will be of Cash Money Records.
But you know what I mean, though? That you will find that, you know, Jesus Christ, Dane, we work in comedy and television. You will find some greedy fuckers of all races and gender in that business. And for him to use that problem that he's got there and target the Jewish community, when, listen, like I say, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, bring it together, minorities support each other, like, bring it together. It can only help further the conversation if we do that. Like, Wiley, fuck you, man. Like, that's bullshit.
It's a very crap thing to do, especially because even if, you know, there is some validity to his statements about him being fleeced by his management and by executives within the industry, there may be a cabal of people that fleece the industry and use subversive tactics. That's nothing to do with their religion. Like, the music industry came way after the Talmud and the Torah was written. So there's nothing written in there to say, like, once music starts popping off, that's how you rinse. And also, I feel like my advice to any person who would identify with the political idea of blackness in terms of how you would define race is that if you're saying stuff as a black person, I feel, that Nazis agree with, what you're saying is not correct. You know, especially because of the fact that, like, you know, there is even a conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-blackness when people describe BLM as a Marxist movement. I just think that it's a massively problematic what Wiley said, because while he, you know, there may be a cabal of people that try, or executives that may have very engaged in industrial intrigue, but I don't think that is not something that is written into rabbinical texts or in the Torah. It's always a point of principle for me where I know if I have any narrative where I may be scrutinizing any cultural traits within a minority group, if Nazis agree with me, then you're probably not saying the right thing. And there's just a real weird, it's a conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-blackness, where there's these QAnon conspiracy theories where supposedly George Soros and Barack Obama are trying to overthrow Donald Trump, who is trying to break up a pedophile sex ring. And because George Soros is Jewish, he's founding the Black Lives Matter movement as a Marxist organization. And it's like, you're talking about, like, Marxism or communism. You know your president is working with Russia, isn't it? And it's like, and in the same way that, like, where you had Tiki Torch marches for where people were loudly shouting, Jews will not replace us in Charlottesville. And the response from the leader of the free world was to say that there are bad people on both sides. I think if you are somebody that is struggling to condemn the actions of actual Nazis, that is very telling. And that is definitely something that I would be very shocked and appalled to think something that Wiley would like to align himself or identify with. So, it's real terrible, very short-sighted, erratic behavior. And, you know, I guess now is added, the further complication has been added to it, whereby he is being, you know, rightfully reprimanded for his words, But now he's been able to weaponize the fact that there is a double standard in reaction to his anti-Semitic narrative, as opposed to anti-blackness, which we see on social media, which doesn't receive the same kind of punishment. Like, you know, you have politicians like Anne-Marie Morris of the Conservative Party referring to N-words in a woodpile. The Prime Minister himself referring to black people's having watermelon smiles and pickaninnies. And this, I mean, this, the list is endless of just instances of flippant racism. Even on BBC News very recently, someone used the fragrant use of the N-word during the day. And it just is. I think that while I can say personally, I see very few, an infinitesimal amount of black people that share Wiley's anti-Semitic views. But I think the inequality in treatment and the punitive measures being taken is just, it's going to cause a further divide people.
And even the way that Wiley has been called out, it's been with anti-blackness. It's like you can call out what Wiley said and you could say it's a terrible thing without being anti-black.
Absolutely.
Without being like, this is why we don't support Black Lives Matter, or just yesterday we were supporting Black Lives Matter and blah, blah, blah. But there are black Jews as well. So in you saying that, because Wiley said what he said, that's somehow emblematic of the thoughts of the Black Lives Matter movement, so you're not going to support Black Lives Matter. But then what about black people who are also Jewish? Like, do their lives not matter? Like, they can't separate their identities. And even the way, you know, the Guardian article switched and put a picture of Kano when they were supposed to put Wiley. Do you know what I mean? Like, even in trying to call out this behavior, there's still so much rampant anti-blackness. And then there's the whole thing of like people that I thought had a lot of sense being like, wow, imagine if what Wiley was saying, imagine if it was a white person saying this about black people, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, we don't have to imagine if this was the reverse, because this happens every day. And guess what?
Every day. If your prime minister, the prime minister is saying this stuff. If your prime minister is saying this with no reprimand, then...
Do you know what I mean? These people have shows on Times Radio. Like, when I think about the abhorrent way that this country has treated black people in media, in policy, and they're given knighthoods for it, they're given TV shows for it, they're given high esteemed roles for it, they're given MBEs for it. Like, let's stop trying to compare these two struggles, and let's not say, imagine if this happened to black people, or imagine if it was about black people, because it is literally what happens every day to no consequence. It is so frustrating.
And nobody said Wiley spoke on our behalf.
For real.
And that's why, and we'll move on to Dane's question, but in conclusion, from, you know, a member of the Jewish community who supports BLM, as Dane knows, like on such a level, with, you know, partly with the work we do here, but just, you know, to think that a man like that with a platform like that is fucking up the joins, the building blocks between those communities, makes me go simply this: fuck you, Wiley. Like, that is just shit.
And it really speaks to, I mean, on a larger scale, it really speaks to the conversations we need to have about what figureheads we tend to elevate within our society. Because, you know, there are a lot of very educated black people who more than recognize and embrace, Afro-Jewish relations. And these people are never given the same platform as people like Wiley, who in himself, despite his age, for by many would be still considered somewhat of an adolescent and never have been a foremost authority on geopolitics or, you know, the intricacies of race relations. So I think, Wiley's an idiot. We all knew that. So moving forward, let's not keep putting idiots on a pedestal from our community, please.
If you've been, you know, obviously following this at home, listeners, then feel free to write, on social. We'll talk, happily engage on social media about this, because if we can try and have a bit of nuance in that conversation online, like get into the details a little bit, it might help a few people understand what's gone on. But it was good to talk about it. I definitely needed to fucking talk about
it. It's good.
Jesus Christ.
Have a vent.
Have a vent, exactly. Rare that I get the chance. Dane, it's over to you for the final question of today's show.
Okay, I'll try and keep this explanation succinct. Shante, as I'm sure you are aware, there have been a lot of, in many ways, potentially performative gestures of goodwill to begin to provide opportunities for and empower black creatives following the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement during lockdown. I say that, I've seen that in terms of, you know, the Real McCoy returning to BBC iPlayer, a few more options being made available for TV opportunities for my peers. But I really don't, but I don't know how things bode for black theatre. And I say that because with Sonny D, two of the core cast members, Bemi Ikemelo and David Ajayo, had their beginnings as performers for the Royal Shakespeare Company. And I was not aware of a Royal Shakespeare Company, much less the fact that they were very talented blacktors and blacktresses performing at the Royal Shakespeare Company. And yeah, I was not able to not only find not only one, but two diamonds in the rough. And, you know, those guys are a very large part of the reason why the show did so well and have now gone on to have, you know, very illustrious careers in television. Bemi herself being nominated for a Screen Nation Award and a BAFTA. So I say that because, you know, very clearly, I didn't even know these existed, and these massively talented people are out there because I guess it suggested to me, like a large amount of the community, that theatre isn't necessarily something that we get involved in. Like for me, theatre was like Blue Mountain Theatre and Oliver Samuels doing stage plays at Catford Broadway in Southeast London. So my question was, Shante, obviously because of your insight and work within black theatre, what is the state of black theatre now, in your opinion?
I mean, it's hard. I haven't done theatre stuff in forever. Even pre-lockdown, I was just like completely out of it, just like busy with life. But I guess like with Black Theatre Club, it kind of started out after watching An Octoroon with one of my friends. And it is this crazy play about a girl who is like 1/8 black and her kind of like it's crazy. It's very kind of intense. There's a lot going on sound wise, stage wise. There's fire, there's water, it's everything. A guy's in white face. It's like it's crazy. So we were like, you know, we need more black people to basically come to the theater, see these shows, have opinions, feelings, thoughts about these shows. And so we needed to find a way to basically coordinate that in a way that was accessible. So we kind of started out by working with different theatres, getting loads of free tickets, and then redistributing free tickets to black people, basically. And like that's kind of all we did. And like I particularly wasn't an expert in theatre, but I enjoyed this experience and wanted to use my platform to give other people the opportunity to do it as well. But I guess it's hard because there's obviously been a huge kind of cut in terms of the amount of theatres that exist, the programs that they can offer. And it's quite worrying because I think what is going to happen now is that now that all this money has been taken away, the theatres are going to go back to that comfortable place of like only producing like plays with high profile white names and high profile white actors catering to the white audience. And I think just when some theatres were starting to do the work to diversify their content and include different creators, all that stuff is going to get rolled all the way back, because now we're going to be talking about budgets and what we can and can't afford and whose stories deserve to be told and whose stories will resonate with the most people. It's going to become purely about profits as opposed to like the freedom and the opportunities and the access that the arts will give you. And so, yeah, it's going to be really hard. I've seen, you know, a few like plays that have been done online or plays that have started to be streamed and you can donate and blah, 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 blah. But like that, if there's not a serious kind of cash injection into the world of theatre, a lot of places are not gonna survive. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's really sad. And theatre's been something that has been so inaccessible for so long. And just when we were starting to really like break through and scratch the surface, it's like, nope, they're gonna go back to what they know is safe, which is providing for audiences that they know can afford to participate in theatre, essentially.
Mm. And just for listeners who may not be knowledgeable about theatre, why? Because obviously there's a lot of people, you know, people who don't have anything to do with the arts who may question why it's so important. And I'm not one of them, obviously. But what would you say? Why? What is the importance of theatre in that sense?
I think it's just like a really important way to consume art differently. Not everything has to be on a screen. It teaches you about expression, conversation. There's an intimacy to theatre that you don't really get in a cinema. And although there are some very archaic and colonial-esque theatre traditions around laughing or speaking and blah, 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 that definitely need to be changed, it's a part of that collective experience that I think you don't get elsewhere. I find theatre so much more emotive, so much more powerful, so much more gripping. Like the fact that it's an experience, you go, you see it once, you can't go and watch it online a million times. You want to be there. You want to be involved. You're immersed in what's going on. And I think it's such a beautiful way to experience art, and it can be so informative. Historically, it has been informative. Historically, it has been influential. So I think like theatre has always been important and will continue to be important as long as we invest in it and as long as we see it as something that is important and it's been a way for communities to organise and create the things that they want to see. Not everybody is going to have access to camera equipment. Not everyone is going to be able to make a film, but there's something about forcing yourself to be imaginative when watching a play, which makes creating so much more accessible.
Do you find there's anywhere where in this country, I suppose, there were some more progressive initiatives about to take place to be more inclusive for, you know, black playwrights and creators and the like. Are there any parts of the world or any scenes where you have seen there's been an embracing of like black creatives and black playwrights, or even if it's amongst themselves, where it seems to be a lot more prosperous? For people who are fans, because I'd say myself, my knowledge is quite limited. Like, I was aware of Blue Mountain Theatre as a production company that would do stuff like plays that would travel from Jamaica and come to the UK. And then, I know Tyler Perry, a lot of Tyler Perry's films began as plays originally. But yeah, I'm not massively clued up about it. I mean, even Dreamgirls, which is like a black cast for a stage play, but not necessarily a black play, so to speak. So,
yeah. Off of my head, I can't think of anything right now, but in terms of like initiatives, I know that a guy called Stephen Kavuma, he runs a diversity school, which is all about kind of diversifying like not only theatre schools, but like productions. And then there's Toby, who created the Black Ticket Project, which is essentially about giving loads of young black kids access to basically the theatre by giving them free tickets, helping to organise school trips. So black people within theatre have been organising to create opportunities that go beyond kind of, you know, just the kids from privileged backgrounds and privileged schools who can actually take them to the theatre. And there are so many incredible kind of young black playwrights that are kind of now taking up space. I know Jasmine, she created Seven Methods of Killing Kylie Jenner, which like sold out almost every single time she put on a play. There are so many more young creative like black voices who are now taking up the mantle in theater, and I think what's happening now in the creative industry is reversing so much of that hard work. And it's like, it's quite sad to see that we were coming to a place where a lot more people were getting engaged with theater. They were seeing a lot of their favorite actors like from their favorite TV shows now on the West End, or now, do you know what I mean? And even for me, like I went to take my sisters to, oh god, I can't remember the name of the play, it's gone from my head, it will come to me. But I took my sisters to a theatre like down in like Central, and the play was all about like kind of feminism and women of the movement and women who were part of like, you know, historical moments in history. And for me, that was like a bonding moment with them to actually talk about, you know, wider historical movements and what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a feminist. And so many of those important conversations now are not going to happen because we're literally not going to have an industry for people to participate in.
Dane, I tell you, this conversation reminds me of some of the episode we had with the poet JJ Bowler, who I don't know if you know. And we talked there about why poetry doesn't feel like it gets enough love from people, you know, like as in that you wouldn't necessarily go to a poetry night, I think is something that's kind of not a lot of people do, which is, I guess, in some ways related to theatre. You know, not a lot of people, it's not accessible, right? People don't feel like they belong at those events. And it's kind of the reason that matters, I think. And it kind of comes back to stand-up as well, Dane, right? Like, there'll be people who come to watch you for an hour and maybe don't know how to behave at a comedy night, like, or they'll learn how to behave at a comedy night, maybe. Is respecting the artist is a kind of thing that you can only do, I think, if you're there in person witnessing their talent, right? That's the magic of theatre, right? Is that, you know, I've been dragged to some things that with my wife over the years that I might not have wanted to go to, or I was apprehensive about going to, because like we were saying before, it's easy to say that you don't want to go somewhere, isn't it? But when you get there and you respect the art in person, it's an incredible experience that more people should understand, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I just think, yeah, it's still somewhat of an untapped resource for young creatives. And it's always somewhat of a kind of annoys me a bit sometimes. I think a lot of young black creatives, it's suggested to them that they have to operate in very, very rigid boxes. And a lot of kids are under this false impression that they have to be either doing drill or grime or one of the more contemporary types of art in order for them to be relevant. Where, you know, Ashanti has correctly pointed out, there are so many other ways of expressing yourself, whether it's small plays and performances, even, you know, collections of monologues and stuff, and so many other subgenres and forms of expression that people can feel prospering if they are aware of it and if they have the resources to do so. So, yeah, I just wanted to...
Is that because of money? Is that when money comes into it? I think with theatre... aspiring to make money.
Theatre, I think money's a big part of it. Not just about people who are trying to realise a profit, but it's like, you know, in terms of sourcing venues and marketing and all of the stuff involved around the industry, is that theatre itself, as an industry, I think, is a lot of its patrons are from a particular socioeconomic background. And I feel because of that, most people outside of it will only kind of be patrons of the theatre on a very superficial level. So most people is like, they'll watch Wicked and they'll watch, like, you know, Five Guys Called Mo and, you know, that kind of thing. But so far as seeing, you know, new plays by newer, more radical writers and stuff, I don't think that scene has been very accessible to, you know, black and brown people unless they are within that industry itself or they're studying at, like, you know, studying a course, then they'd be more inclined to be patrons. But I think, yeah, it should be on both sides. It's going to require, you know, an industry to support these emerging creatives, but it also requires for patrons to be aware of and continue to support as well. And I said, not just to go and see plays that are like, you know, Tyler Perry style plays, but, you know, just have more and more awareness. So I really hope that anyone that's listening, yeah, checks out some, you know, black playwrights and black creators and stuff. Because as I said, you know, you get some amazing acts from there. Like even Don Warrington, who was also in Sunny D. Don Warrington was doing Glenn Ross. Towards the end of last year.
What a play that
there
is.
You go, yeah. Seen and he was the lead in that.
It was a great film of it as well.
Yeah, he was the lead in that. Yeah. So, again, you know, it's testament to the fact that you get some amazing performers in some incarnations you wouldn't even expect. Like, I remember Lindsay Lohan was doing a stage play over here, Zach Braff from Scrubs. So, you know, if it's any impetus to listeners and stuff, it's like you get some amazing... Most actors and actresses who are worth their weight in gold will tread the boards. So... get involved in theatre because you'll see some very good people. I think David Harewood was doing some plays and stuff. Lenny Henry did Othello and Fences. That's how I found out about Fences and stuff as well. So, you know, I really feel like if you want to see the most talented people in their most minimalist and stripped down form, then definitely check out the theatre.
It's been a really good episode, Dane. I've enjoyed this one a lot. We've talked about three very different subjects, right?
It's been very, very varied. You know, highs and lows. Real conversation that went down today. Shante, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And repping the small islands. And yeah, loved the last interview that you did on TV as well. That was hilarious. Oh, and I admire your poise and patience because I would have thrown my chair a long time. So that being said, where can people find out more about your good works and hear more about your editorial, please?
So, yeah, I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Shante J, and I'm constantly writing. I don't know why I'm telling you my last story, but anyway, I'm actually going part-time at my job. I have a full-time job, so I've been writing all this stuff, doing all this video stuff, whatever, alongside a full-time job. And I'm now like going to go part-time so I can try and do more writing. I'm also writing a book about the Black British Power movement that is like kind of taking up a lot of my time at the moment that I'm hoping to finish by the end of the year. So keep a lookout for that. And yeah, just literally keep an eye on my socials for all the stuff that I'm doing because it literally all goes straight there.
So good. On the cusp of creating, yeah. I would like a first manuscript of the book, please, when it's done.
Of course.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and congratulations on taking a step towards going, you know, all the way into the creative industry. I know
this creative,
it'll be great,
crazy man. I'm shook.
That's it, man. But do something that scares you.
I might as well try it now.
Exactly. Then do something that scares you. It's nice to know sometimes that you don't know what's going to happen, as opposed to know what's going to happen every single day for the next 50 years.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at danebaptweets or Instagram at danesnaptiste. Our guest was Shante Joseph. You can follow Shante on Twitter at ShanteJ. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheHowardCohen. The show is mixed and mastered by Decode. You can follow D on Twitter and Instagram at OfficialDecode. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram
at DBQE Podcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.